You are listening to Sheep Might Fly, a podcast of serialized fiction written and read by Tansy Rayner Robbins. Hi everyone, this is the final episode of Kissing Basilisks, a Bella Donahue serial which will be packaged in the Holiday Brew collection a little bit later this year. So my Patreon subscribers, as always, will get it first. Next month, in August, all Patreon subscribers, including those at just $1 pledge a month, will receive the ebook of Holiday Brew. And those who pledge $15 to Patreon this month, so before the end of July 2020, will get the special offer early paperback of Holiday Brew sent to them in September. For the rest of you, you'll have to wait till October when Holiday Brew will go on general sale, ebook and paperback, just in time for Halloween. I'm a big believer in buying books for Halloween. Next week, we're going to start a new podcast serial here on Sheep Might Fly, The Frost Fair Affair. One of my all-time favourite titles. I still remain utterly delighted with it. This is the sequel to Tea and Sympathetic Magic, which was on this podcast earlier this year. So it's another romantic Regency magic adventure featuring Neem and her spellcracker, with a lot more spies and sleigh rides than the last one in the series. I'm really excited to share it with you. I do plan to write more in this series in the future. There's at least one more Neem story planned. And then I might be branching out. I kind of have plans to do novellas for quite a few of the side characters. I have a title for Lady Liesl's story. I want to do one with the Queen. Metis, of course, Cousin Metis deserves her story. I think I'm going to be having fun with this particular series set in the Teacup Islands for some time yet. But for now, I'm also really excited because The Frost Fair Affair is a finished novella. I have written the whole thing. I have edited the whole thing. I have had the whole thing professionally edited. I'm feeling very on top of this particular project, which I think you'll all hopefully appreciate, since I know Kissing Basilisks has been me lurching from chapter to chapter, hoping desperately that I didn't run out before I got to the end. So it takes a little bit of the pressure off to have the next one completely ready. In fact, I'm now not going to be writing anything new for the podcast until 2020, because after Frost Fair, I am planning a first audio version of another novella that I'm very fond of, with Christmassy themes, which I have not yet, recorded. So that's exciting. I'll let you know more about that in the future. The funny thing is there are actually several holiday-themed novellas or short stories that it could be, because I write Christmas stories a lot, to the point where my teenager has started asking pointed questions about what my problem might be and why I feel I need to write so many Christmassy stories. I really like festivals, okay? I did my honours thesis on Roman festivals. I think people are really at their most interesting when they're celebrating something. The question is then why I haven't done much in the way of wedding stories, but I have to write one of those before the end of the year. Anyway, I'm getting distracted. You want to hear the last chapter of Kissing Basilisks. Chapter 21. Basilisk or no basilisk? Ferdinand Chauvelin didn't save Hebe. The house is gone. Ferd felt it die. When it happened, he wasn't running to the rescue of the woman he loved. That was Sage and Jules and Viola, who caused a distraction by blowing up the swimming pool at the back long enough for Hebe and Deck to get the hell out. He wasn't working to throw up a magical perimeter, protecting the neighbourhood and possibly the entire city from being damaged when the house finally gave up and imploded in a rush of damaged shadow magic. That was May and Holly and Professor Fordyce. No, Ferd was busy arguing with his parents and sister. in front of the police and paranormal squad, hoping not to get arrested. When the house died, he felt it like a mosquito sting on the back of his neck. A tiny flare of what magic used to feel like. A last gasp of shadowmancy. It flattened everyone else. Several of the paranormals, most of the Basilisk board, Sadie, Juniper, Professor Fordyce, they all hit the ground when the shadows of the house gave up their final wail. Holly and May were still on their feet, only just, clinging to each other, as they held the runes tight to keep the house from blasting out of the locked zone. Without his magic, Ferd saw what any magical null might see. A house, dissolving into a black cloud, that whirled and fought, but could not escape the runic field. For one horrible moment, he didn't know if Hebe was still in there. Juniper's phone began to ring. She sat up, rumpled and dizzy, handed her phone to Ferd like he deserved to know first. He put it to his ear. Yeah? Got him, said Sage. His throat was hoarse, like he'd been smoking non-stop for a week. Ferd felt his knees shake, like he couldn't stand up much longer. He caught Holly's frantic look. They're okay. She burst into tears. The rest of New Year's Day was spent in a series of white rooms, explaining things to a series of unfriendly-looking authorities. Mysteriously, most of the Basilisk board managed to avoid this particular stage in proceedings, though that turned out to be helpful because it meant Nicholas and Marine Chauvelin were left with few allies to back them up. Irene Nightshade, one of the few members of the board who did follow to the police station, made it very clear that she intended to press charges against the Chauvelins for endangering her son. Victor Vale, who turned up about an hour after he should have done, reluctantly agreed to do the same on behalf of Viola. Sadie, Ferd's sister, cried a lot. Viola didn't cry at all. It was all kind of a blur. Ferd didn't say much. Well aware that he was a brown-skinned man in an Australian police station and his parents' lawyers were unlikely to be looking out for his best interests. He couldn't rely on the family money to be sure he was safe. He couldn't rely on anyone for anything, except his friends. At one point, Juniper sat next to him, with her hand on his arm, and asked a lot of questions of the nearest police sergeant about family restraining orders. Later, he'd probably be grateful about that. It was all hours of talking and not talking. Ferd didn't feel like he was even inside his body by the time it was all over. But then they were home. Some of them changed from pyjamas into entirely different pyjamas. Pizza had been ordered. Home was the top floor of the Manic Pixie Dream House. That had been true for a long time. At one point, Ferd staggered out to the sweltering kitchen to get a glass of water and found himself staring at the black shadowed handprint on the fridge for like 20 minutes. He only stopped when Hebe joined him in the kitchen and tucked herself up against his chest like she belonged there. They leaned companionably against the sink for a few minutes, being numb and quiet together. He patted her hair and said, "Does this mean..." "It's New Year's Day," she mumbled into his chest. "New beginnings." "But does that mean..." "Don't overthink it." He kissed the side of her head. "You're the one who overthinks things. I'm just here to look pretty." "No thinking," she muttered. The pizza arrived, and since they were the closest, they trooped down the stairs to fetch it. When they returned to the living room, they tried to avoid all the meaningful looks from their friends. Sage stuck out a leg to fake trip Hebe, and she kicked him. He hooked her knee and brought her down next to him for a hug. "Hey, since when do you have ink?" he teased. "I thought you were a virtuous member of society." "What are you talking about?" Hebe said, baffled. Ferd could see it too. The line of a magical tattoo flickering back and forth along her collarbone, barely visible beneath the stripy pyjama top she was wearing. A jolt of recognition went through him and he yanked his own t-shirt off over his head. "Dinner and a show!" hooted Viola, but then she stopped and stared at his chest with a very different expression. "Oh." "Yeah," said Ferd. "That." His tattoo was gone. His skin was a sea of unmarked brown, from shoulder to stomach, like he'd never been marked, never been tattooed. Sage reached for Hebe and she slapped his hand away, undoing two buttons of her pajama shirt herself, blushing as she pushed her bare shoulder out on display. The familiar wings of Ferd's beloved phoenix tattoo moved with surprising vigour across Hebe's shoulder and collarbone. There were more gold details than he remembered, and the line work was a little more delicate. It was clearly his tattoo. "Whoa," said Jules. Everyone was staring. Hebe quickly buttoned herself back up again. "And that's enough of a cabaret," she said firmly. "Are we talking about this?" Holly said, sounding a little shrill. "Because I am not cut out to be the boring sister." "We're not talking about it," said Hebe, and shoved pizza in her mouth. Over the evening, she kept glancing at Ferd, her hand moving to the place on her skin where the phoenix tattoo had chosen to live. At some point, they were going to have a conversation. There was a bit of clean-up required after last night's party. Everyone moved around each other quietly, getting it done. Finally, the whole gathering collapsed into a bromances marathon, as was often the way. Ferd slipped away, for a moment to himself in the backyard. Viola found him within minutes. "Here you are," she demanded, like his escape was an insult. Ferd leaned against the brick wall and said nothing. Viola flounced over to sit next to him. Jules, unusually silent, dropped to his other side. "It doesn't have to be awkward," Viola said. Jules snorted. "Why would it?" said Ferd sarcastically. "Just because our parents hate each other now, and mine were prepared to let you die for a slim chance of getting my magic back." "I was referring to the kissing," said Viola. Ferd choked out a laugh. "Pretty sure we planned never to talk about that." "Suits me," muttered Jules. "So stupid," Viola sighed after a long silence that was not unawkward. "As if we need some ancient triangle spell to tell us that the three of us will always have each other's backs." Her small hand slid into his and squeezed. "I just thought of something," said Jules. "I'm the only one of the three of us who doesn't have to roll back up to Belladonna U in March. I'm free." "I hate you so much," said Viola. "I'm going to drop out of uni, get a job as a broom weaver," said Ferd. "Nope," said Viola. "You need a diploma for that these days." She laid her head on his shoulder. "You know how some people believe that what you do on New Year's represents how your whole year will turn out?" "Ha," said Ferd. "That's depressing." "No, I think it's good. This year, it's going to be about figuring out who we are as adults, not defined by our parents. Destroying our childhood homes and betraying our childhoods," Ferd suggested. "Metaphorically," said Viola. "Oh, well, not entirely metaphorically. I'm going to be devastatingly successful without losing access to my trust fund. Thank you very much," said Jules. Viola sighed again. "This is why people find it hard to like us, Nightshade." Jules shrugged. "Why would I need other people? I have you." "They're not so bad," said Ferd. "Other people." "True," Viola said in a tone that suggested she didn't really agree with him at all. as long as you still like us best. There was a time in his life when people looking at Ferd and not seeing a basilisk king seemed like the worst thing in the world, but now it was weirdly freeing to have lost it. I'm going to need a new tattoo, he said, and closed his eyes while his two best friends started bickering about what design he should choose, as if they got a vote. Sleep. He needed sleep, and tomorrow he could start the new year all over again as a man without magic. The comforting sound of Viola and Jules arguing about something that was none of their business reminded him at least that he hadn't lost everything. He had one more year as a student of Belladonna University in the College of the Unreal to figure out what came next. A lot could happen in a year. Thank you for listening to Sheep Might Fly. That is a wrap on Kissing Basilisks. So you can sign up to my author newsletter for updates. Follow me on Twitter at TansyRR or at Sheep Might Fly. Find me on Facebook at TansyRR Books. And if you like this podcast, consider supporting me at Patreon, where you can receive all kinds of cool rewards, early ebooks, and exclusive stories for a small monthly pledge. July, August, and September this year, 2020, is a great time to join my Patreon. I've got so much cool stuff rolling out. I'm starting to experiment with new things. It is the place to be if you like my stories. And I will see you next week for chapter one of The Frostfair Affair. See you then.